Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are back talking to our friend and journalist in Gaza, Hannah Salah. As always, actually, I'm joined by my co-host, Martin McMahon. Martin, how are you keeping?
Not too bad, Tony. We won't waste time. We'll go straight to Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah, could you mind? There's a lot of talk now about people from a spokesperson for Hamas talking about a ceasefire, and that, you know, there's going to be a cessation in the airstrikes and the rocket fire and that. What are you hearing now, and how are things in Gaza today?
Yes, people in Gaza expect, and even observers expect, that the truce should come through today or tomorrow. Things on the ground are not indicating that the truce will be so much soon in these coming hours, but we expect that this operation will take some few days, maybe 1 or 2 days, to end. Yesterday, there was a speech from political actors, officials in Hamas outside Palestine, in Qatar, and in Beirut. They confirmed that there is a progress in the truce talks with Israel that is taken indirectly through Egyptian and Qatari and UN mediation. One of those Hamas officials indicated that if a truce happened from Gaza, it will be related only to the issues of Gaza. It will not be related to seizing fire and violations in West Bank and Jerusalem. And this is what complicates things. This is not good. People here in Gaza are not feeling good if the current escalation will be seized only for not launching rockets and not launching airstrikes in Gaza without talking about further demands related to easing the Israeli siege, easing the restrictions that was imposed by the Israeli siege, and removing or stopping the legal violations against Palestinian residents in Jerusalem. So this makes the negotiation hard between the two parties. However, on the ground, though the airstrikes is still continuing, but the number of airstrikes and the number of launched rockets from Gaza are limited for today compared to the previous days, which indicates that both of the two sides are preparing for upcoming truce. This morning, Hamas launched a rocket towards the Israeli soldiers' bus, but it was empty. And some observers say that Hamas was targeting it empty and don't want to make a big injuries and killed cases among the Israeli soldiers preparing for a truce. But if they want, they can kill more number of people. In addition, the Israelis as well are doing a limited number of airstrikes to the residential houses. There is a limited number of killed cases compared to the previous days. Over the last night, only one case was killed. She's a woman, and she died because of heart attack from the huge strikes that happened in southern area. Actually, the airstrikes yesterday focused on southern Gaza, on agricultural lands, military posts, residential houses, infrastructure, even direct target to the streets, which were damaged. Gaza Municipality today issued a statement that said 20% of the water network was affected by these strikes on the infrastructure. This will affect the people and their access to water. In Gaza City, the number of airstrikes yesterday was very, very limited compared to the previous days. But it was moved from striking Gaza City to striking southern Gaza, Khan Yunis area, and north Gaza, Jabalia refugee camp, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun, where the earthquakes were there yesterday. It was in Gaza in the first 9 days of the escalation. Today is the day 11 of this continued escalation. The only commercial crossings with Israel actually the only commercial crossing, it's one crossing, is still closed. They open it for 4 hours before 2 days, allowing some fodder and material fuel for the electricity plant to enter. But then they get back again and close this this crossing. There are more updates actually about the number of targeted houses and the damages that were caused by the Israeli airstrikes. The numbers for the losses for agricultural sector increased to more than $200 million. For the number of houses that were partially or totally damaged, 16,800 houses, 1,800 are not able to be used by residents again. So they will remain displaced until they rebuild their house. Regarding rebuilding the houses, actually, there is talks about reconstruction mechanism that Egypt will take role in supporting Gaza in the reconstruction mechanism. But this is not clear. They provided, through media, they said that Egypt will provide $500 million to support the reconstruction of Gaza. But the mechanism actually is not that much clear because, you know, based on the Israeli siege restrictions, the entry of cement and other material for the reconstruction will not be easy. So this will take time unless there will be a clear, clear negotiation regarding these items and the mechanism that they will put for the escalation. So I think that talking about the truce should be that much clear when they declare the truce. And we don't know yet if it will be on Friday or Saturday, but people were expecting that it will happen on Thursday, but on the ground things are still ongoing and I don't expect that it will happen today.
Just going to stop the pod right here. Tony, we've been doing a huge amount of these pods lately. I mean, we've gone to Gaza. I don't know how many times we've been in Gaza with Hannah Salah. We're after covering housing every which way but loose. We've had Paul in from Fianna Fáil. We've had an interview about the housing. What highlights have you got for the last couple of weeks?
Honestly, it's been a phenomenal amount of work, but I kind of think it was necessary. It shows the volume. Like, I mean, Martin, if I told you the numbers in terms of people listening has just simply exploded. It's exploded. And God, it's a terrible metaphor given the coverage of what we were actually covering and the fright of my life as I heard missile strike. But again, you know, we started talking to Hannah a couple of years ago. So it was, you know, it was a matter of more, you know, yourself. Unfortunately, folks, we weren't jumping on a bandwagon. It was simply a continuation of coverage of what we were doing. The problem being that it demands actually daily updates. It does, you know, you need to cover it and you need to keep it into consciousness. People get almost conflict fatigue, but if you don't keep it up, the narrative will move on, the media will move on. And I think it was important that we try to do those daily updates.
Yeah, and it was important to cover housing, and particularly yourself and Rory have done so much work on this. So it was really important. And Rory, again, we said it last time, he's having a huge time at the moment. He is the voice of reasonable housing policy.
Well, I mean, we've looked at we're saying the same stuff since 2013. It's just now resonating even more, you know, and it's these cuckoos have come home to roost, Martin.
Yeah,
you know?
And if you go back over the Tortoise Shack archives, you'll see the progression going back to the very first podcast we did
actually,
was about housing.
Rory's first podcast with us was his first reboot was 3 years ago yesterday.
Yeah, and our very first guest was Erica Fleming, and we were there about housing as well, and that's gone back a fair while, Tony. Yeah,
absolutely. It was where we started. We started with people living in emergency accommodation, and we continued to bang that drum. I just do, we want, look, this is, sounds very self-aggrandizing, but we need support. We
have to have it. If we don't have it, we're not going to survive, and we're being very straight about that. So you got to remember how to join. First of all, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And if you're already a member, tell your friends.
Yeah, do tell your friends. We've had a lot. This is now actually what we do. This is what we do now. So if you value it and you're getting something out of it, and I can see that thousands of you are, please someone. If you thought one day you might buy Martin a cup of coffee, because God bless him, he needs a cup of coffee, why not virtually buy him a cup of coffee?
It would Patreon.com/Tortoise Shack.
Let's get back to the podcast. Talk to you soon.
Talking about the truth should be that much clear when they declare the truth. And we don't know yet if it will be on Friday or Saturday, but people were expecting that it will happen on Thursday, but on the ground, things are still ongoing. And I don't expect that it will happen today.
There was the Israeli side said they took 12 series of airstrikes overnight last night, which is a decrease in their previous days that they've been doing. But I mean we're talking about over 65,000 to 70,000 people displaced now. We're talking about reconstruction costs, as you said, somewhere around $500 million, and you're talking about the damage. And then today you shared with me pictures, images of livestock that are dead, even bees needed for pollination that have been killed in the process of the military action. And then there's the side of that the shelling that was taking place, where I mean they're shelling it from the sea they're shelling from the other side. So even though it's quieter than it was, I mean, you can't live in dignity if there's shells falling, even if they're not landing on civilian targets at the moment. There's no dignity in that. How are the people feeling now about the idea of, you know, we can't just, I can't imagine that people in Gaza think we can go back to how things were 10 days ago, 12 days ago. It can't just be that everything goes back to the way it was and the siege of Gaza continues as it has done for nearly a decade.
Yes, I will answer you based on an interview that I did with one of the families that faced massacre yesterday. I did that interview for the LA Times. The brother of a man was killed. He said to me that my brother was disabled since 16 years old, since 16 years. And his only daughter is 3 years old. And his mother was, his wife was 7 months pregnant. Three of them were killed by an airstrike in the middle area in Deir el-Balah. When I asked him if he expected truce that will be coming soon and that will reduce the number of grief that we will see in the coming 2 days to be added to these 11 days, he said that we have started this escalation to stop the violations of the Israelis. And I don't care about the truce. I have lost everything, and we have lost our house, which was targeted by the Israeli airstrike. So I don't think that it is logical to start the truce on this current situation. They want this escalation or this battle, as Hamas called, to continue until the Israelis achieve some of the demands that were requested before even the start of the current escalation. So people are tired, but they don't want to stop and return back to what was in the 10th of May and before 10th of May, actually, because the Israeli siege started since 2007 and affected all the sectors of economy in Gaza and even affected the life in Gaza. So it will be hard for people to accept just ceasing fire. They want a truce and they want good conditions that achieve dignity for them to live.
Hi, Hannah. I just want to ask about infrastructure. The hospitals have been damaged. The schools have been damaged. The COVID testing laboratory has been damaged. How are you going to get back to dealing with the other crisis that's been running alongside this, which is COVID?
Ministry of Health warned many times during this escalation from expected third wave of COVID-19, but maybe the numbers are not increasing because people are staying in their houses because they fear from the current strikes. Actually, some people did not leave their house since the start of these 11 days. It's hard to move in the streets because they target everything that is moving, sometimes the cars, the houses, the schools, kindergartens even. So maybe this will or have already decreased the number of COVID-19 cases. But if the this escalation is stopped, people will start moving to fix their things, and this will affect actually them. The number of received vaccination is not enough to be given to more than 55,000 Palestinians out of 2 million in Gaza. And one of the doctors who was dealing with the COVID-19 cases, the critical cases in the hospital, Dr. Abu Al-Awf, he was targeted in one of the Israeli airstrikes, or actually it was a target to many houses, and he was in one of these houses. So this will put extra pressure on the health system regarding dealing with COVID-19 cases in Gaza. I have met many of the health staff in the Ministry of Health and in Gaza hospitals. They said that they are under pressure due to the lack of equipment. The Israeli siege imposed like restrictions on importing the good material, good machinery for examination, for treatment. And they expect that this will add the pressure on them in the coming days after the end of escalation. But there are some also notes from the health staff. They said that they received a lot of killed cases directly in the hospital. They were working extra hours, but compared to the previous wars, they were dealing with many injured cases. They were doing a lot of surgeries in the day. But currently, they are saying that we are not doing a lot of surgeries, but we are receiving a lot of killed cases. This war meant to kill directly people, not only to get injury or to just terrorize those people.
This is actually, you have a piece in Al Jazeera about this today, about and you were talking to doctors in Al Shifa Hospital, and the point was made by the doctors that you know, as a surgeon was talking to you about the fact that in the last time there was clashes and violence and military action like this, he was busier with surgeries to try and save people, but now he said that the strikes are more lethal and they are killing more people, and that's bared out by the facts of 230 people, including 65 children, killed in the last 10 days, you know. So it is cruel, but we've spoken on this podcast already about the fact that people had to be transferred to Egypt for healthcare. Can I ask, I know one of your colleagues was injured yesterday, he's okay. He needed treatment. Did he?
He went through one surgery to his leg. He don't know that this will need the time, actually at least 6 months until he can walk again. He don't know that this is truth. He is still thinking that it is just a normal injury. He needed to be transferred to Egypt. But he is not transferred yet. There is a process that should be done, and I think that his case need to be followed up by doctors. So it's not easy for him to be transferred currently. I have also met, other than the journalists, there are a lot of children who were who get shrapnels in their heads, in their legs, and their even stomach, and this affects them too much. And their families told me that we are waiting to be them to be transferred to Egypt. However, they have concern that the Egyptian hospitals are not that much developed to receive the cases and to treat them in a good way. They have this concern, actually, because in the previous wars, Turkey used to receive injured cases, and other European countries we're supporting those Palestinians who get injury to get developed treatment, health system treatment. So I think that these concerns concerns by the parents are valid, because the type of injuries is critical. It is not one injury. It's complicated when they are taken out of, from under the rubble and they get shrapnels. It's not easy for the health system in Gaza or in Egypt, because they are not going to directly to the heart of Egypt in Cairo or these cities. They will go to cities in Sinai near Gaza, and they have concerns that these hospitals will be very equipped with developed material and machinery.
Anna, when it comes to the ceasefire, or if the ceasefire happens, will there be some time taken to count the cost, both human cost and economic cost, of the last 11 days?
I expect that the UN agencies, the international NGOs and Gaza ministries will do joint assessment for the losses. As usual, this was happening in the previous wars. The ministries in Gaza cannot do that because it don't have the financial resources, the human resources, the trained resources even to do assess the damages accurately, because it's not only about the economy, it's also about the protection standards and what the people faced during this escalation. It's not about targeting your land as much as the need to rehabilitate the land and to reconnect farmers with the market. It's not about the families who lost their houses, but about the trauma that the children faced. So the economic loss is part of a huge loss that the Palestinians in Gaza were affected by.
Anna, I last thing for me today, just we keep touching on it, but if there is a truce and if there's a ceasefire, the negotiations, we've talked about, you know, the problems in East Jerusalem, we've talked about the right to worship in Al-Aqsa Mosque, we've talked about the need now for the farmers to be able to export their produce and for the fishermen to be able to fish, so the economic sanctions. The only way this succeeds and doesn't happen again in a few months' time or a few years' time again is if people in Gaza are given the right to live in dignity with their own, with freedom of movement. I can't see a solution where that's possible given the current Israeli leader in Benjamin Netanyahu. I hate to be so dark about this, but are we just looking at another example of that this might stop for a while and then the process begins all over again? And I'm struck by something that you said to me a while back, that sometimes in Gaza you feel that this is just your fate. We have to stop this cycle of violence that just keeps happening.
I am sorry, really, but I don't think that this is an acceptable scenario for Israel to allow Palestinians to receive all their rights. For example, if they open the sea again, it's still closed for the second week. For more than 11 days, it is still closed. They will allow fishermen to enter again to 6 nautical miles or 15 maximum in some areas. According to Oslo Accord that was signed in the 90s between Israel and Palestinian Authority, it's supposed to give Palestinians access to 20 nautical miles. Since the 2005 until now, none of fishermen was allowed to reach 20 nautical miles. We went through 3 wars and negotiation and even ceasefire, but they did not allow fishermen to enter more than 12. And in the recent years, in 2019, they allowed fishermen to enter 15 nautical miles only in near Khan Yunis area, not all the Gaza Strip. So I think that the Israelis will not give Palestinians a lot of good conditions even after the truce. They will just allow the entry of some material to do the reconstruction of Gaza. So this is the most urgent need, and they will allow you to achieve your most urgent needs. Then you have to cope and you have to live, but they will not allow you to have a free trade. They will not give you a free possibility to travel whenever you want. They will not allow internationals to enter Gaza easily. Since 2012, internationals, even Solidarity, for Solidarity reasons, they cannot come here. They did not allow the Solidarity campaigns to enter Gaza from France, from Europe, from Arab countries, from Malaysia. For a lot of political reasons, also Egypt restrict the entry of these Solidarity campaigns. We are talking about very complicated conditions. They isolated Gaza Strip from all the world, and they will not easily reopen this coastal enclave for Gazans to develop themselves. They consider that everything is dual use, and they are thinking only of Hamas as the only actor in Gaza Strip. They forget about residents and civilians who are living here, who are looking for achieving their dreams. Today, I was speaking with a lot of friends, and they were asking me, Hannah, why are you doing a lot of work? And are you thinking of what we are thinking of? We should stop doing things in Gaza, and we should invest outside Gaza. Why you are thinking to stay here? So it was not my idea, but I told them that currently this is not the big priority. Currently we have this battle, and we are living under this battle. Yes, this is a choice that we all think of it. But I found, and I was shocked, that if, for example, the crossing was open today, you will find many families will leave Gaza because they don't have hope of any progress that can be done, even if a truce happened. I'm not a negative person. I like to think positively, but on the ground, I don't think that the Israelis will allow giving us good conditions that will help to develop Gaza. If they wanted to do that, they should have done that from years and without killing many Palestinians. So doing this military pressure on Gazans doesn't mean that they will give us good things, and they will just give us a prize just because you have you were resilient for many years under the Israeli siege. So now we will appreciate your effort for staying under the Israeli siege, and we will allow you to live freely. I am not kidding, but this is logical, and this is what is happening. They will allow us just to reconstruct some of the damaged buildings and areas in Gaza, and I don't think that this will happen in 1 year or 2 years. Gaza built a huge economy. It is not a component of economy, but I can say a good shape for the economy, and it was destroyed all in these 11 days.
Yeah. Hannah, sorry.
Mark, go ahead. No, go
just
ahead.
Just interception.
Yeah, I meant to say the very last, there are families that are placing their children in different homes out of fear with the exchanges, as it's called, because they want to make sure that if there are airstrikes, that that some of their children will be safe. This you know, like, is that just a common practice?
No, it was not. It did not happen in the previous wars, but in this war, because Palestinians witnessed enough massacres, this was newly. I did not hear about this practice before, and I think that this means that they faced a lot of death in their families, and they are trying to find a solution for children to live in Gaza. Those people who are doing that, they are not thinking at all to leave Gaza. They want their generation to stay in Gaza and to live for longer years in Gaza. But for other families that I met, they want to leave Gaza, and they don't think that this is a solution. When you are doing exchange for two sons, You don't know the fate of those sons. You may lose one or two, or you may lose both with their relatives in any airstrike. It's not expected. It's expected, but it is not known if they will be really targeted. So things are very hard for Gazans. And this solution actually means that they faced a lot of death. It is not something normal.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on and having this talk with us today. We can see that you look a little more rested today, which is great. You're on top form, and we hope to come back to you again soon. But thank you so much for taking the time out and having this chat with us.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. And thank you, Tony.
No problem. Listen, folks, we'll be back in your feed soon. We have more things coming your way. And if you can, we put up a list of organizations that you can support in Gaza to help, particularly for the children's organizations. We have a list of those. You'll find them on the podcast. Just have a look and see if you can throw a couple of quid that way. It'd be great. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.